But if I'd have to stick a year on it, I would say it was probably 2008, because I think it was written in reaction to the bubble, the housing bubble bursting, and all the bailouts of big banks and corporations and things that happened in the wake of that burst bubble. It could have been in 2009 when they were talking about it in retrospect. I don't know. But the wedding of Hudge and Gudge was basically when the government, big government as represented by Gudge, well, whichever one's which, I forget actually. So let's see. Hudge is the liberal. So big government, as represented by Hudge, bailed out these investment capitalists, right? The banksters, who would definitely be, in Chesterton's view, Gudge, right? So the big government guys, Hudge, bailed out the big business guys, the big banksters, Gudge, and that would be the wedding of the two. And there's a funny thing in the piece about how the minister at the wedding was a CNN host who looked the other way the entire time he's officiating at the wedding. But the beauty of it is that everybody wins. I mean, everybody? No, the top dogs, right? The big guys. Now, I don't know what G.K. Chesterton would have thought. So I'm recommending that everybody read that piece by Kevin O'Brien. If you're into humor about these things, it is kind of funny. And it's kind of funny to watch the best man get drunker and drunker as he's explaining what a wonderful wedding this was. I don't know what Chesterton would have thought of George Orwell's work, of his Opiscula, either 1984 or Animal Farm. But when I was pondering this, I was thinking of Animal Farm, which I only read a couple of years ago, well, within 2 years, two summers ago, in fact, I read the thing and enjoyed the heck out of it. And I'm glad I waited till I'm this old to read it, because I wouldn't have gotten it if I had read it as a young man. I read 1984, I think, when I was in seventh grade, and I kind of half got it. But reading Animal Farm in this second half century of my existence was, I think, beneficial, because I got it. I understood what it was referencing. And at the risk of spoiling the book for those who haven't read it, and by the way, you should read it. It's a good novel, and it really is a commentary on things that are still going on in the larger geopolitical social questions. So I don't know what he would have thought about it, because he died 9 years before, right? He died 9 years before Animal Farm came out, Chesterton did. So at the risk of spoiling the book for those who haven't read it, the ending is a beautiful allegory of the coming together of Hudge and Gudge. It's basically this wedding of Hudge and Gudge that Kevin O'Brien parodies in the pages of the Distributist Review. In other words, it's the totalitarian Bolshevik, symbolized by the pigs on the farm, and the industrial capitalist, symbolized by the farmers who had up to then exploited the animals, neither of whom has the interest of the common man at heart, or the common farm animal, as it were. The whole thing's it's an allegory of society, which everybody who reads it knows, even young people who read it understand that much. But at the end, you get this peculiar twist where you see this merging together of the big capitalists with the tyrannical Bolsheviks. And that is exactly what happens on the world stage. They both play us for fools, and they've been doing it for decades. So what does this have to do with Dr. Fauci? Because I called the show Hudge, Gudge, and Dr. Fauci. All right, so switching gears here, but it's all related. So you probably recall my mention of that conversation earlier in the show, at the beginning of the show, with a priest friend. That priest friend is a Chestertonian, and you know, he's the one who told me, hey, that sounds like Hudge and Gudge. Well, that conversation that I had with him was somewhat autobiographical, in as much as I was telling him how I grew up during the Reagan years. And during those years, in fact, I was kind of coming of age. At least this is when I became conscious of the realities outside of my little bubble in New Orleans, what the national politics were, what was going on in the world, and so forth. And I had imbibed through and through. I was a Reagan man. I had imbibed all of the pieties associated with being a Republican, that is a capital R Republican. And those pieties would have included, you know, capitalism good, socialism bad, free market good, government regulation bad, big business good, big government bad, and such like. Now, I'm not saying I changed my mind on all of that. I mean, it's some of those things that I labeled as bad really are bad, or at least bad when they exceed a certain point. Well, big government's always bad. I didn't know. I couldn't have articulated for you what supply-side economics was, what trickle-down economics would have meant. But if it was dubbed Reaganomics, I would have told you it must have been good because it had the R word in it, and it must have been good, and St. Ronald Reagan was certainly one of my favorite people. Now, again, a little autobiographical here, but my family were among those Southern Democrats who converted, as it were, during the Reagan Revolution and became Republicans. And that was a big thing. I mean, the Solid South, you know, there were a lot of conservative Democrats in the South when I was a child, a lot. And, you know, it used to be you could never win a local election if you ran as a Republican because there were no Republicans or there were hardly Republicans in the area. That changed drastically, I think, all across the South, but certainly in my little part of it during Reagan's years. Now, what does that have to do with the price of ivermectin in Manhattan? Well, let me tell you. So during those years, Democrats were promoting big government regulation, and Republicans were promoting cutting regulations and making things as friendly as possible for big business. Republicans also promoted the military-industrial complex to the hilt, and to question the advisability of that was, of course, to be a damn communist, right? Because, after all, we had the evil empire on the other side of the world trying to, you know, who were just eager to press the button and send nukes to blow us all to smithereens. This is what was considered conservative when I was growing up. And this might sound partially a parody, but it really isn't. This is real. I mean, liberalism was even stupider, but this is what was passed for conservatism. Little did I know that this was simply the 1980s reheat of Hudge and Gudge. Democrats were at least pretended to be peaceniks at that time. Okay, now they no longer are. The peacenik Democrat is virtually non-extant. You hear more peace talk from paleoconservatives and libertarians than you do from Democrats nowadays. So enter Fauci. Okay, now enter Fauci, stage left. He's a bureaucratic creature of this very era. He came to the helm of the NIH in 1984, when I turned 14. 5 years later, he oversaw the approval of a massive increase in vaccinations to be given to children. So the book that Robert F. Kennedy Jr. wrote goes into the early history of Dr. Fauci and how his sort of apotheosis to this beloved saint who is sort of the patron of, you know, the patron of infectious diseases. And he's the person that you invoke. He's the part of the heavenly court that you invoke for protection against infectious diseases. He's assumed this public persona because based upon a decades-long fraudulent career of profiting from the fast-tracking of dangerous drugs that killed people, that in the net total made the United States from one of the healthiest countries on earth to the least healthy of the most 25 prosperous countries on the globe. That's where we are now. All this diabetes, all this, all the heart disease, we've become fatter, we've become more diabetic, we've gotten all of these, you know, first world diseases. People think it just is a natural result of prosperity. No, it's not. We're not as prosperous as we were either at the time he took the helm. I'm not blaming him for that. I mean, you can't blame him for everything. But it's not the cost of prosperity. It's the cost of eating garbage food. It's the cost of and it's the cost of a medical system, which is sort of a dog being wagged by the tail of the very rich pharmaceutical industry. And this is where Fauci enters. He is kind of the wedding band, if you were, that unites Hudge and Gudge. If Hudge is the liberal, as represented by big government and this constant listening towards socialism, and big regulation of the government into the private sector, then Gudge is represented by the enormous moneyed interests of big pharma, your enormous companies like Pfizer or Moderna or Bayer or Merck or AstraZeneca. I don't know if that's a company or a product, but their name is Legion. And these are filthy rich companies. I read recently that BioNTech is another one. I read recently that Pfizer made $26 billion since the COVID thing. They're making billions off of COVID-19. It's not even a debatable point that these companies are profiting off of this so-called pandemic. If just as Chesterton reasoned that let's not vote for the Hudges and the Gudges, let's not sit here and say we're going to let society, we Catholics and we just normal people, frankly, who are people of conscience, who believe in the natural law and who believe in some semblance of morality, and yes, Catholics who fully accept the revealed law of God, we're not going to pretend that our interests are represented by the Hudges and the Gudges, by the guy with the R behind his name or the guy with the D behind his name. And that's only in the United States. You know, if you're up in Canada, they've got a different stupid two-party system. If you're over in England, they've got another different stupid two-party system yet. And all across Europe, you have this, although in many European countries, you have more than just two parties. And oftentimes, you have coalition governments and so forth, which we don't see here at all in the United States.